This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between, from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Banton. Along with me on this journey, revisiting 80s movies, is my co-host, Jason Masek. Hello, Jason.
Roxanne. A word of two syllables locked inside my head. You see, I am, and I will always be, the one who loved you without limits.
That's right, listeners. We are discussing, with spoilers aplenty, the 1987 romantic comedy Roxanne, distributed by Columbia Pictures. It stars Steve Martin, Daryl Hannah, and Rick Rossovich. Directed by Fred Skepsy, this movie is rated PG with a running time of 1 hour and 47 minutes. The movie is based on the 1897 play Cyrano de Bergerac, by Edmund Rostand. So, what is this movie about? What's on the box? If you grew up in the 1980s and went to your local video store to rent this movie, you would find this description on the back of the VHS box. It is What's on the Box. Take it away, Jason.
Comic genius Steve Martin delivers an incredible performance as an engaging small-town fire chief who has only one tiny flaw. No, make that one huge flaw. His astonishingly long nose. Although he considers it no laughing matter, the hilarity never stops as C.D. Bales, Martin, contends with jerky nose jokes, a bumbling crew of firemen, and his secret love for a gorgeous astronomy student, Roxanne, Daryl Hannah. Unfortunately, she's attracted to fireman Chris, Rick Rossovich, who's tall on looks and short on conversation. And when CD agrees to coach the dumbstruck Chris in his pursuit of the fair maiden, this ticklish triangle dissolves into a hilarious series of rib-tickling romantic misadventures. A contemporary love story of mistaken identity and unrequited love, Roxanne is an unforgettable comedy that Siskel and Ebert and the movies calls a comic masterpiece. Roxanne.
Wow, they gave away the movie reviews there at the end.
Yeah, I guess we don't have to do that segment.
No,
let's
I guess not.
Go right to our conclusion then. What are your thoughts?
There we go. Jason, what are your earliest memories of Roxanne?
Well, Bill Bant, you know, this is one of those I don't have much for in the way of specific memories. I remember that I watched it at least a few times, if not more, on cable. I really liked this movie as a kid because it was simple. It was sweet. And mainly because Steve Martin is damn charming and so freaking funny. This movie is so much him. I also remember Rick Rossovich because he was in Top Gun. It's like, hey, it's the dude from Top Gun. And he was being handsome and goofy and awkward. And I remember the beautiful Daryl Hannah being beautiful and kind. And beyond that, just some of the details of the general premise, of course. But we'll get into that. I don't need to discuss the details of the plot right here. To put it plainly, when I think of this movie, it makes me feel good. My heart tells me I really like this movie once upon a time. And I hadn't seen it in many, many years. So that's it, man. I was looking forward to revisiting it again. What are your earliest memories?
Yeah, I don't think I have much more than you. This was a rental for me. I remember, you know, the movie coming out and just the whole thing with Steve's nose. And I had never heard of Cyrano, so I didn't know this was based on a play. I just remember every time they were promoting this movie, it was always that opening clip of the fight. I think I've seen that scene 15 times before I finally saw the movie. They were always showing it everywhere. Of course, the scenes when Steve Martin, who plays CD, is always feeding lines to Chris, Rick Rossovich, all right, that kind absolutely. Of stuff. Yeah, the interplay between the two of them. But that was about it. I did watch this like you a bunch of times on cable, but it has been a long time since I've seen this movie. So certainly looking forward to getting back into it. So yeah, that's my earliest memories. Very short and sweet.
No doubt about it. It's one of those two, now that I've revisited it, as the movie was playing along, I was going, oh, I remember this. Oh, of course I remember this. But before rewatching the movie, I was trying to rack my brain as to the specifics. And like yourself, I do, of course, remember the classic scene with the character Chris, played by Rick Rossovich, having the earpiece in his ear as CD, played by Steve Martin, is feeding him the romantic lines to speak up to Roxanne, who's looking down from her balcony. Very romantic, but very funny, super awkward. So yeah, of course, that's an early memory. And just the fact that Steve Martin, like I said, is funny, but his physical comedy is definitely an early memory. So let's get into our initial thoughts then of this classic comedy from 1987.
All right, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to start with our director, and I'm going to ask you once again, speaking of how to pronounce the names here, I looked at the director's name as I would personally in my head was pronouncing it Fred Schepisi, but I think you pronounced it differently. Do you know offhand? Did you hear in an interview by any chance how it is pronounced?
I looked it up and phonetically it said Skepsi.
Skepsi.
Which blew me away too, because I would have said the same thing you did. And right, then when I looked it up and saw that, I was like, okay.
Skepsi. We'll go with that then.
So I'm if glad I'm saying you did, it wrong, did your I no, apologize.
You did your homework. You did what you were supposed to do. So let's start with our director, Fred Skepsi. Australian director, and here's some notables from his 1980s. He directed Barbarossa in 82, starring Willie Nelson and Gary Busey. I got to go back and watch that. He directed Iceman in 84 with Timothy Hutton, A Cry in the Dark with Meryl Streep. He's worked with some heavy hitters. Then going on to the 90s, he directs The Russia House. Speaking of heavy hitters, Sean Connery, Michelle Pfeiffer. That's a loaded cast. He did Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck, 6 Degrees of Separation with Will Smith, IQ with Meg Ryan and Tim Robbins, and Fierce Creatures, which I forgot was sort of a Fish Called Wanda reunion. Well, Fred Skepsi is 84 years old and still has some upcoming projects. So that was a little snapshot for you for the director of this movie. And then we got to talk about Steve Martin a little bit. We did do one other movie. Was that on our podcast? I can't, my memory is just lacking. Was it on our show with guest star Russell from Retro Movie Roundtable, or did we guest star on his show?
He did it on our show. Are we getting to that point already where we're already forgetting what we've done in the past?
I know. So we did do one other Steve Martin movie on our podcast where he had a smaller supporting role, but memorable one in Little Shop of Horrors. That's what I was trying to get to. Anyway, Steve Martin, star, writer, and producer of Roxanne, this movie we're covering today. Technically, I guess he was the co-writer because, of course, Edmund Rostand actually wrote the original play, Cyrano de Bergerac, way back when. Steve Martin, well, he's got a storied career, did some TV work in the early 70s. You might be familiar with it. Then in the late 70s, he was in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. He was in the Muppet movie. Have you heard of this one? The Jerk? Absolutely. Then moving into the 80s, he does Pennies from Heaven, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Man with Two Brains, Three Amigos, Little Shop of Horrors, Roxanne, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Parenthood. Wow, quite a run in the 80s. Afterward, he is known for other films such as L.A. Story, Father of the Bride. He takes on the role of Inspector Clouseau in the Pink Panther movies. And most recently, he was starring alongside Martin Short and Selena Gomez in the very popular and critically acclaimed show, award-winning show, Only Murders in the Building. But for the older generation, he's probably still known for his unique brand of stand-up, playing the banjo, and of course, being a wild and crazy guy in his appearances on SNL, that Saturday Night Live. By the way, quick trivia question, putting you on the spot. How many times has Steve Martin hosted Saturday Night Live?
7.
Not even close. 16 times.
Wow.
No kidding. I would have been right there with you. So I don't blame you for going low, which I'm sure you thought was high. I would have thought that was high too. Because you think of the Five Timers Club, right?
Right. I knew he's done that.
16 times. And I don't think he's even the one that's done it the most. It's crazy. The great and incredible Steve Martin. Okay, getting to my initial thoughts of Roxanne. I'm looking forward to this one. I watched the first hour and 15 minutes the other night before I had to pass out. It was getting too late. And when I got up and turned the TV off, I actually was self-aware and noticed that I had a smile on my face. That kind of sums it up for me. I forget, man, what a wonderful physical comedian Steve Martin is. Now, there is some stunt double work in this when he's doing his gymnastics, I think, climbing Roxanne's house. Does that a couple times in this movie, but I'm just talking about Steve Martin in general. We all know this. We've watched his comedy over the years and just how expressionistic he is. It's in his face. It's in his body. He just has such wonderful control over his body, his voice, his face, his movement. It's really impressive. I have to just shout out the makeup work in this because his nose looks great. I was really going to be nitpicky. I was like, do I buy it? What does the nose look like today? Because the nose is a star unto itself in this film. And I think it looks great. They do a really, really good job blending it in with his face and his complexion and skin tone. It's blended really well. I wanted to comment on the locale. The whole town and location in this really work well. Stepping on trivia, it's shot in Nelson, British Columbia in Canada. And I looked up Nelson on Wikipedia and Google Maps. You know, it's known for its restored heritage buildings from its glory days in a regional silver rush. So all the houses are old and beautiful, and it feels like this small town, well, it is a small town, nestled in the Selkirk Mountains. It's very atmospheric and built on slopes. All the homes are like on these slopes. So either you're walking up or down a slope, which would make you think everyone in this town would be in really good shape. So the location brings out this whole fairy tale feel of this movie for me. It's very romantic. It's seductive in a way. It's fun. Feels magical. Where you'd believe some slightly fantastical things might happen in this faraway land that seems distant but familiar. So it really helps with the just go with it elements of this sometimes over the top and farcical comedy. One other location in this, I love the local bar in this movie. It's outstanding. It's large. It's spacious. It's all wood. Very saloon-like. Feels like it's out of the Old West. There's just a really cool atmospheric feel for me in this movie. I love the setup of these characters. It's a comedy. It doesn't have to be subtle. In this type of comedy, the characters have to be a little overblown. Obviously, we have C.D. Bales. That's Charlie Bales and his nose. But guess what? C.D., our protagonist, also happens to be highly intelligent, clever, witty, a firefighter, the chief of the fire department, and a wonderful writer that also has excellent fighting skills. It's awesome. We have Chris, this great looking guy who's a firefighter pro that's come into town to help these volunteer firefighters kind of hone their craft because they're a bunch of bumbling fools and they're hilarious. But anyway, we got this guy, Chris, great looking dude. And he's got a real problem talking to the ladies, so much so that it makes him sick to his stomach. Outstanding. The point is, it's not just that CD, our protagonist, has a big nose. It's not just that Chris has a problem talking to women. It's taken to the next level, which makes the obstacles loom even larger. So it raises the stakes. And I love that about this movie. I love the supporting cast. Love seeing Shelley Duvall in the role of Dixie in this. So likable. We have Fred Willard, hilarious. Michael J. Pollard, who I call out all the time. I always think of him as Owen from Tango and Cash. Was he in Scrooged? Did we call him out for Scrooged?
Yes, he's in Scrooged. Yep.
Right. Damon Wayans has a small role in this. Man, he's such a baby. And Kevin Nealon has a debut film appearance in this. Wonderful. A couple of the others I may mention later. And I will say Rick Rossovich does his job well as Chris, the handsome firefighter. Really, he's super, super awkward in this. Slightly over the top, but it works for this kind of comedy. And yes, every time I see him, I do think of Slider from Top Gun. That's just how I see him. And I want to give a shout out to Chandra Barry. Chandra Barry plays the role of Sandy. She's my girl in this. I love her. That's my type of girl, I got to admit. I mean, if I'm not thinking about Elizabeth Shue, that type of girl from the 80s, yeah, definitely Chandra Barry is Sandy. Great smile. Very cute in this. Everything in this movie works for me. Even the lighthearted B story of these volunteer firefighters trying to learn how to operate, or the group of old ladies that are always about town gossiping, and even the scenes that don't necessarily serve the story work in this because they're either amusing or really funny. And I think Bill and I, we've talked about this, where if you're going to have a conversation, let's say in a movie, or that doesn't fuel the through line or move the story forward, it had better be damn funny. And it is in this movie. If there's a scene that just is kind of like, oh, this is going to be a brief showcase for Steve Martin, he's going to do a shtick, I'm all for it. Give me more Steve Martin. Absolutely. So I'll get right to it here at the risk of sounding like an old lady myself. Watching this again as an adult, I find this movie delightful. Just like Steve Martin, it's light on its feet. It's his showcase. It highlights everything he's wonderful at. The writing, because he did write this. His wit. I talked about his physicality. He is hilarious to me in this. Really silly. He's very silly. It makes me laugh. This is a really easy watch, and it's an hour and 47 minutes that flies by for me. Those are my initial thoughts, Bill Bant. What about you?
So preparing for this podcast, I watched this movie 3 times, and each time I watch it, I liked it a little bit more. But I got to be honest with you, Jason, after the 3rd time, I actually got a little sad.
Oh.
Yeah, let me explain. So I'm jumping to the end of the movie. So spoilers, be ready. So in the end of the movie, you have Roxanne, played by Daryl Hannah, who falls for Charlie, which is Steve Martin, and his big nose. And it looks like we have a happy ending. And this is where I get sad, because there is a scene where Roxanne tells Charlie that she loves him. And Steve Martin's reaction to this news is great. It's a close-up shot of him, and just the look he gives, like, I was literally feeling what he was feeling. It was great stuff. It was really good acting. Mm-hmm. Thought it was great. So when she tells him about this, he's on the top of his house. He comes down, and they get ready to kiss, but then there's some awkwardness because of CD's nose. I mean, it's big. It gets in the way. They're having trouble figuring out how to kiss, but then Roxanne figures out to tilt CD's head a certain way, and then she goes to kiss him. And when I'm watching this, and this is, you know, the 3rd time, and I don't know why, and I think to myself, wait, CD doesn't know how to kiss a girl? Was that his first kiss?
Oh, okay.
We don't hear about any past relationships throughout the movie. He always talks about his nose being like a mental and physical hindrance to him to finding love. CD's in his early 40s in this film, I'm guessing.
Sounds about right, yeah.
And everyone in this town seems to adore him, but no one enough to date him. So was this his whole life the whole time that he never got to experience love? It got really sad to think about that. Everything else about him is great.
Exactly.
But because of this nose, it's kept him away from falling in love.
Right.
And it just made me really think about it. It's like, has he been really lonely this whole time?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has this nice house and he's had no one to share with it. And then I was thinking about his childhood and God, how terrible that must have been. And did he move to Nelson because it's a small town, to get away from all that ridicule? You know, we never hear anything about any family. Did he have brothers and sisters? You know, what's going on with his parents? It was just a lot of questions. I don't know why this happened, but, you know, I felt great that he met this girl and wonderful and everything that he was looking for and that they finally got together. But what has happened to his life up to that point? And then, you know, he waits that long and then, you know, he brings her to the house and it's like, all right, what happens there? The mind started running. But yeah, that really just kind of just made me think. I was like, man, that's just got to be tough just because of that nose, just how much it's just impeded his love life. And he's got everything else that you need. Great job. Good looking guy. Well spoken. Very intelligent. And maybe he's never really been with anyone up until this point. That was the initial thought. My second one is, so Shelley Duvall, who plays Dixie, which kind of gives the impression that she is CD's best friend, is not given enough in this movie. I really liked her in this.
Yeah.
I really believe they've been friends for as long as they've met for the first time. I actually wanted to see more of her and less of the fire department shenanigans.
Okay, sure.
To be honest, because I could see that they don't have like a mutual attraction to each other. So I think that's why it kind of worked. So it wasn't like Dixie has been pining for CD this whole time. They're just straight up friends. They're just good friends who can share stuff with each other. And just the way that Dixie feels for CD, that she wishes that he could get over this mental block or even get the operation to reduce his nose, which we find out in the movie that he can't do that because he's allergic to anesthetic and it could possibly kill him. So that's, you know, the excuse they can throw in. But I really liked her in this. I wish she was in it more. That was kind of a bummer. I probably would have gave her like 5 to 6 more minutes and knocked out some of the fire department stuff, or reduced the fire department to maybe half as many characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. I'll get into that more in my complaints, but that's my initial thoughts of it. It's just how I felt for Steve Martin's character in this at the end, and then give me more Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple points I want to also just reinforce, because that's interesting with Shelley Duvall. She is great in this. It's great to see her. She's so natural, and I completely buy her as CD's best friend. So when you were describing your thoughts and feelings on her character, I was kind of expanding her role also in my mind, going, what would it have been like if she was harboring some feelings for CD herself, instead of just playing the straight, loyal best friend? And she really, really appreciates him for all these wonderful qualities that he has and looks beyond the superficial. So that, in as far as my understanding is, the original Cyrano de Bergerac, he does not end up with the girl in the end. That's what,
correct,
in the original version.
Correct.
And that's something that Steve Martin changed for the script for the film. So what do you think, Bill, then? I pose this question to you now. Would it have been interesting to see CD is pining for Roxanne, that's an unrequited love, and Roxanne just ends up leaving town and goes on to pursue a career in astronomy, etc., and he is somewhat brokenhearted when she leaves, only to see that all along his best friend Dixie has been there and in love with him. And then he kind of wakes up to that fact, and like that's where it ends, where he then sees that maybe she could be a better partner for him.
I don't know. I feel like we've seen that storyline a lot too.
Sure. Yeah.
No, I'm okay with him ending up with Roxanne at the end.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
But I even like the fact that we don't see that Dixie's harboring any feelings for CD, that she's just a true friend. They're just friends,
mm-hmm,
through and through. I like that.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. But also, I just wanted to, again, reinforce the point you were making about this being a little bittersweet. And I agree with you, because this is a romantic comedy and there is a bittersweet aspect to it. The fact that he probably is, no doubt, overcompensating for the fact that he has self-image issues, because this is a overly distinct nose that he has. So there's no avoiding it. So now he's built up his intelligence and his wit and his ability to fight and lead and all these things. I mean, he really is the ultimate dude. You know, he's like almost like a superhero, except he just has this physical issue that is a cosmetic situation. And that's a big deal, because it affects your psyche. It affects your emotional being, because you look in the mirror and you think you look a certain way and you want to feel attractive. You want to feel like you are attractive to the opposite sex or whomever you want to be attracted to. And to go around with that in your head all the time, it has a real effect on you. So I to think maybe he really has never known love, as either a result of girls not being attracted to him, or he has shut himself off unintentionally because of the way he feels about himself, that he doesn't love himself because of his nose.
Yeah, it almost seems like because of this physical anomaly, he has enhanced everything else that he can.
Right.
Because intelligence is a physicality. But if maybe women in the past have expressed interest, he just has this mental block. No, they're not really into me because of my nose.
Yeah.
Maybe he had opportunities in the past, but because of just this mental block about no one likes me, I'm ugly, I can't be with someone. And it really takes until Roxanne to break him out of that shell.
Yeah, good stuff. It just took me to a deeper level there. So I appreciate you pointing that out. We ready to get in some favorite scenes?
Yeah, let's get into some favorite scenes or moments. And for me, I'll start it off. This is very early in the movie. We meet CD in the fictional town of Nelson, Washington. And we find out that he's head of the firehouse there, which is mostly made of a volunteer fire department. He has gone through town. He's run to some probably visitors and have a little scuffle with them. And he arrives at the firehouse to find out that there's a fire in the firehouse. And there's a barrel by one of the fire engines that's underneath the fire pole. And all these flames are shooting out and smoke is filling, and CD is just looking at it like, what the hell is going on? And he runs over to the barrel and he has this great speech, because this is what CD has to deal with throughout the rest of the movie with these volunteer firefighters. And he goes, "God damn it, we're supposed to put him out." And all of a sudden you see all the volunteer firemen are up on the top floor and there's smoke pouring up there. And they're like, "Hey, what's going on? What? And they rush over to the top of the fire pole hole and look down. They see the fire and the fire is going on. And CD continues with, "I have a dream. It's not a big dream. It's just a little dream. My dream. I hope you don't find this too crazy. Is that I would like the people of this community to feel that if, God forbid, there were a fire, calling the fire department would actually be a wise thing to do. You can't have people, if their houses are burning down, saying, whatever you do, don't call the fire department. That would be bad." And at that point, CD grabs a fire extinguisher and literally just puts the fire out really quick, walks away and goes, "Please get that cleaned up and don't make me have to explain it." So at that point, you realize, ooh, he's got a huge task at hand. And then we hear a knock on the door. And I think that leads into your first favorite scene, right?
It does. It does. It absolutely does. I'm glad you laid it out, though, because that is a really funny scene. There's one element, too, here. When I talk about Steve Martin, his comedy, what I find so attractive about his comedy is sarcasm. He really does sarcasm well. And in that, when he gives that little speech, it's great. And they're just volunteers. You know, this is small town. I love the small town aspect of this. I can't say it enough. It's a beautiful area, but everybody knows everybody. But these guys, you know, they're just volunteers. They're a bunch of bumbling idiots, and it's funny. And what a great way for him to just go to the fire department to see that there is some sort of obnoxious fire within the department going off. It's very funny. So that happens and there is a knock at the door. And this goes into my scene, as Bill said, what I'm calling the meet cute between CD and Roxanne. And just a reminder to the listeners, every time we say CD, that those are the initials CD, C being Charles. But like Bill said, we've now already been introduced to C.D. Bales, as he is the chief of the fire department. And in the midst of this scene that Bill laid out when he's going to the fire department to check in, we cut to the character of Roxanne. And she is staying in town for the summer. She's staying in this large, beautiful heritage home. And at this point, this is dusk. It's early evening. Her cat has gotten out of the house. And when she tries to coax her cat, Grover, to come back in, she gets a robe caught in the door that slams shut behind her, and now she's locked out. So she literally has to disrobe and is now naked. She runs to the local fire department and hides behind a bush, knocks on the door, and now CD agrees to help her. And they go back to her house as she's running behind a row of bushes. And she says, "Why don't you get me a coat?" And he says, "Well, you said no." And she says, "I was being ironic." And he says, "Oh, no, we don't do irony here, because we're just a bunch of hippies, basically, that smoke dope and ski in the mountains for recreation. So we haven't done irony for a number of years." There's some funny banter back and forth, and they go back to the house, and he jokingly tries to unlock the front door with a MasterCard. It's very funny. You think he has his toolbox with him. He opens the toolbox, and it's just one credit card, a MasterCard, resting in the bottom of the box. But the MasterCard doesn't work in the lock in the front door. So he then shows off his dexterity by nimbly climbing the side of the house and going all the way up to the top and climbing in through the attic. He throws a blanket down to her. Then he unlocks the front door from the inside. And they are now both inside and they begin conversing. And this is funny because he makes himself at home immediately. He's like making some cheese and crackers or a snack plate of some sort. And she pours him some wine. And there's a funny bit here because she pours it in a small wine glass with a stem. And he has trouble drinking from the glass because his nose is an obstruction. He can't put the glass to his lips because his nose keeps blocking the rim of the glass. So he asks her for a straw, but she doesn't have one. And then he demonstrates his ability to literally sniff the wine down, or up, I should say, into his nose. And he calls it a fun party trick. And then they get to talking. And he learns she's an astronomy student. I am assuming a graduate student. And She's got this large telescope she's planning on using while she's staying there for the summer, and they just have some fun banter. It's great. He's really charming. She's very sweet, and she's asking him, do you know how many like heavenly bodies there are up in the sky? And he's like, I think there's more than 50. It's just this great interaction. They have really nice chemistry, and it's very fun writing. And as he goes to leave, he does this great kind of slapstick type of comedy where he walks to the door. As he opens the door, he pretends to hit his head on the door. Then he opens it, turns backward, and awkwardly trips backwards. And then he finally closes the door, but he closes it on his hat. And it's all on purpose, and it's all just part of his charm, and it works. I love that type of comedy, and it makes her laugh. And he stands outside as she turns off the light inside her home, and he's just looking up at the house and says with a sigh, Roxanne, because he's in love with her name and he's already smitten with her. He's quite taken with her. I love all of it. It's funny to me because I was watching it a couple times. He's a little forward and pretty intrusive and comes off as extremely confident, even though we know he's got some self-image issues for sure. He's probably a little insecure, so he overdoes it a little bit. But man, Steve Martin is great. So I love this whole meet cute. It's a great setup of not only Roxanne, but also how he's so quickly taken with her because she is a beauty. Daryl Hannah, quite striking. That's my first favorite scene.
Yeah, three things I want to point out in that scene. The first one is, yes, Steve Martin feels very comfortable in that house. And I didn't understand that at first. But then when you find out it was Dixie's house that she rents, I was like, oh, he's probably been in there so many times. He just kind of knows his way around. But yeah, that did catch me off guard. And then in the later scene when they mention, oh, $9,000, we're going to rent that for the summer. Oh, man.
I had that in additional questions. I was going to ask you if you thought that was reasonable.
Nowadays, that's for sure.
Nowadays, it would. Absolutely. For
that would be
a
steal.
Beautiful house in a beautiful part of the country.
The second thing is, yeah, I think one of my favorite lines of the movie is when Steve Martin, you know, he's like, oh, I'll grab my tools. And he's walking with this red toolbox the whole time to Roxanne's house. And then he takes the toolbox, literally puts it in front of the door, and he's about to flip it open. And he goes, well, every job has a perfect tool. And you open the box and all you see there is that MasterCard. And he just goes, oh, this lock doesn't accept MasterCard. Great line.
Absolutely.
And then the third thing, and this was like, oh, my God, did I steal this? So when I was the mascot for the Dolphins, anytime I was leaving a room, I don't know how many times I did that bit that Steve Martin does when he leaves the house.
Pretending to hit your head on the door?
Yeah, I was like, shit, did I steal that from this and never realized it?
Right.
Because I would do that. I would like smack my head into the doorway and then maybe stumble through and then sometimes would close the door and my fin would get caught in the door and kids thought it was like the funniest thing. And I was like, oh, my God, I think I stole this whole bit from Roxanne. I don't know. But it did look very familiar to me. That's for sure.
I absolutely love that story.
But hey, if you're going to steal something from Steve Martin, why not? You know?
Oh, that's what you do. You steal from the best. That's exactly what we're told. If you're going to steal from the best. And I can't get enough of that type of comedy. Any comedian that can do a pratfall exquisitely, as Steve Martin does, we know there's other comedians like a Jim Carrey could do it. It's like when you see like a guy go onto a talk show, one of these famous comedians, and they sit down in the chair and fall backwards, and you just buy it completely because it's so effortless and so smooth. I'm going to shout out fellow actor and friend from the University of Miami, Yulin Middlebrooks, that moved out to LA the same time I did in the early, I should say now, mid-90s. He did that once. We were on a double date and we went to a movie theater out here in LA and it was totally dark. We walk in with these girls just as the movie is about to begin and he eats it. He totally trips and falls. We are all like, oh my God. And we're laughing as we as human beings do. We laugh at others' pain, especially when they trip. And he gets up. He had faked it. He totally faked it and he nailed it. I was like, oh, I was so jealous in that moment because he was really good at doing that pratfall. And when Steve Martin does it in this scene, it's priceless. Love that moment.
I thought it was just funny that you pointed that moment out in that whole scene. You know, we didn't discuss this beforehand for me to talk about it on my end, that I would do that all the time. So the fact that you just pointed that out, that's hysterical.
My favorite part of the scene. Yeah.
All right. What do you got next for a scene or moment?
I got a really, really short scene, and it's not too long after this, where Now we're kind of seeing what the fire department has to do in town. They don't get too many big calls, not too many fires. And in this particular scene, I'm calling it a poignant scene between CD and a local kid named Peter. And we see CD outside of one of these large heritage homes, and there's a crowd standing around. And this young boy is up on the roof all by himself, just sitting there. And down below, there is the crowd and his mother, who's very concerned. He's up there again, she says, and he usually doesn't stay up there this long. CD says, "No worries, I'll go talk to him." And there's a really funny quick moment actually here I want to shout out, because he walks by the crowd, and I believe Dean is the character's name that's standing there. And he's, I believe, one of the volunteer firemen. He's like taking notes, and CD walks by him and says, "It's Bales, B-A-L-E-S, and spells." And he's like, and then you hear Dean go, "Oh, okay, B-A-L-E." He's like, I know your name, like, because they're friends. But he got caught off guard in that moment. And again, CD, using his dexterity and his parkour skills, climbs all the way up the back of the house. And all of a sudden, he appears on the roof. It's great. I love this because he sits down next to this poor kid who's a little overweight. And he says, "Peter, what's the matter, man? What's going on?" And the kid says, "They call me Porky at school." And CD replies, almost talking to himself, he says, "Why do they have to do that? God damn it." And I love that line because, as we know, in the present day, bullying is a real issue in school. Bullying has been around forever. We all dealt with it growing up. It's a tough, tough thing. But when Steve Martin delivers that line, "Why do they have to do that? God damn it," it's so genuine and heartfelt. And we know that clearly CD has had to deal with some bullying and name calling in his day. And he immediately relates to what young Peter is going through. So they are two peas in a pod here. And he asks Peter, "Did you talk to your mother about it?" And she says, "Once I tried, but she said I had to clean my plate first." And CD thinks he's kidding, but he's like, "No, I was telling the truth." And they just have a moment of bonding here. Peter looks at him and says, "Do I have to get down now?" And CD replies, no, let's just stay up here for a while." Like you said, there's some sadness in this movie. That's a bittersweet moment for me. Not that I've had to deal with a lot of bullying in my lifetime, but I can't necessarily empathize with it. But man, it moves me because when he says, "No, let's just stay up here for a while," you see Peter smile as if, "No, we're in this together. We don't have to do anything. Nobody can tell us what to do. I found somebody with some commonality here that I can relate to." And I think it's a sweet moment. So I just want to call out that short scene.
Yeah, that is a good scene. I guess I almost have like minor complaints about it. One, I wish it was longer because I actually wish that somehow CD would relate his issues with the boy.
Sure.
Just expand it just a little bit. That line when he's like, "Oh, why do they have to do that?" That's awesome because it's like he knows exactly what this kid is going through. I wish he would kind of give him some pointers of how to deal with this. And then with it ending going, "Do I have to get down now?" And he just says, "No, let's just sit up here for a little while," which is just great too. Because then I wish we had a reaction to the, you know, because a whole bunch of people are gathered around the house waiting to see what's happened next. I almost kind of wanted a little bit of that. My only issue with the scene, and it's a big issue with comedy, and this just shows that writing comedy is hard, because when you're writing a comedy, you're almost doing bits and you're kind of just jumping from one thing to another. Now, granted, this is not a comedy bit, this moment, but it almost happens very abruptly. And that's the one thing you always find with comedy. It's almost like you abruptly go from one thing to the next. And like this scene almost comes out of nowhere. And there's one or two other moments that happen early in the film that for me, it took me a while to get into it. And then the movie starts flowing, which I like because that's a hard thing for a comedy movie to do, to really have like a flow to it. Mm-hmm. I think kind of once you get past this, the movie does flow a little bit more. But I wish there was a little bit either build up into the scene, like maybe we see the kid at some point, but then we never see the kid again. So we don't know what happens to him. But the scene itself, I really do enjoy it. Unfortunately, if you had to cut stuff out for time, you could easily take the scene out. Not that you would want to, but you could, because it just kind of comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
But it has the two great moments. CD delivering that line, it's like, you know, "Why do they always have to do this?" And then just the, "Now let's just sit up here for a while."
Right. And I understand your opinion. That I totally respect that. It's understandable. I felt like it worked for me because at the start, it's like, oh, this is what the fire department is usually getting called in for. These are the jobs that they have to do right. in this small town. It's stuff like this. It's like, it's interesting. I was going to comment in my additional questions. We don't see the police department in this movie.
No.
It's as if the fire department is the police department. They have to go on all of these house calls, basically, for these minor things, or what we would feel is minor. So it kind of worked for me in that way. I totally get where you're coming from.
I mean, I like it.
Yeah. See, for me, that I said in the beginning, there are scenes in here in this movie that don't necessarily move the story forward, but they all work for me because I found something that worked within it, separate from the story. It just appeals to me for whatever reason. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great example of that.
What do we got next, Bill Bann?
So it's kind of a big scene in the movie. So in this town of Nelson, there's the big bar hangout that everyone seems to go to. And we have CD with Dixie and Roxanne. They're hanging out and have some drinks. And some random guy, I'm guessing he's not a local, comes up to CD and says to him, "Oh, I heard you're kind of a tough guy." Just comes out of the blue. It just kind of says that. And CD just kind of poo-poos him off. And the guy walks away. And you're like, all right, what the hell was that all about? And then CD gets up to go to the bathroom and he's walking away from this guy. And this guy yells out to him and goes, "Hey, Big Nose, where are you going?" CD, once again, kind of waves him off, takes a couple steps and then turns around. "Wait a second. What did you say?" And he's like, "You heard me, Big Nose." And CD just kind of laughs at him. He's like, "Seriously, that's the best that you could come up with? Big Nose? You couldn't come up with anything else?" And the guy's just kind of looking at him like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And CD's like, "You had a moment. You had a moment to insult me. And that's the best you can come up with?" And the guy's like, "Oh, you think you couldn't come up with something better?" And CD's like, "Hell yeah, I could have come up with something better. All right, let's try something." And there's a dartboard. And the CD hands the guy the dart. And he's like, "Throw the dart at the dartboard. Wherever you hit, I'll come up with X amount of insults that are way better than what you did." Guy throws the dart, hits 20. CD's like, "Oh, shit, 20. So he grabs the dart and just throws a quick joke. And now at this point, everyone in the bar is looking and the bar is full.
Yep.
And everybody knows that CD can kind of handle himself. So they're excited to see how this turns out. And CD's like, "All right, best 2 out of 3, best 2 out of 3. Throw again, throw again." So the guy throws again, hits another 20. And then the guy goes, dart champion, Colorado last year, something like that. And CD's like, all right, here we go. 20 more insults that are better than what this guy said, Big Nose. And he literally rattles off, technically, he rattles off 25. But yeah. If you watch it on TV, it's 24 because one of them, they admit, because it's kind of sexual. He does the 25, and I'm going to read off some of my highlights that I liked. He goes, so these are from CD to the guy to tell him that he can come up with 20 better insults than being called Big Nose. And he themes them all, too, before he says them. Meteorological. "Everybody take cover. She's going to blow." Punctual. "All right, Dunman. Your nose was on time, but you were 15 minutes late." Polite. "Would you mind not bobbing your head? The orchestra keeps changing tempo." Scientific. "Say, does that thing there influence the tides?" Inquiring. "When you stop and smell the roses, are they afraid?" Pornographic. And this is the one you do not hear on TV. Finally, a man that can satisfy 2 women at once. And of course, when he says that one, all the women in the room go nuts. Paranoia. "Keep that guy away from my cocaine." Aromatic. "It must be wonderful to wake up and smell the coffee in Brazil." And he goes through them. And the last one he says to the guy is, "Dirty. Your name wouldn't be Dick, wouldn't it?" And after he finishes, he says to the guy, "You flat-faced, flat-nosed, flat-head." And he goes to turn, and the guy's really pissed because he's been embarrassed because everybody has been getting into this insult because halfway through, he's like, "How many do I have left?" And he's like, "You're at 14. And when he's reading off the last insults, everybody's counting down. And then when he gets to the end, everyone cheers. This guy is extremely embarrassed. So what does he turn to? Violence. And he goes to attack CD, and CD gives him a quick elbow, punches him in the face, and then walks away, and he's still standing there, and he walks up to the table and goes to Roxanne. "Has he fallen yet?" And at that point, the guy slumps to the ground and CD walks off. So just a fun moment. It's almost kind of a long scene.
Yeah.
But it really shows, unfortunately, what CD has gone through most of his life and that he's prepared for these moments. Because we do see something happen in the earlier film when people insult his nose and it goes to violence. And now in this moment, he tries to go the intellectual route. But unfortunately, it does turn to violence. But CD can handle himself. It's not a big thing to him. Unfortunately, it's something that he's gone through over and over again. He handles it very well.
Absolutely. This is probably maybe the second most iconic scene in the movie. I don't know, second or third. But it's awesome. It is Steve Martin. And it's the character showing off his improvisational intellectual prowess. The fact is, this actually could play into that earlier poignant scene between the kid on the roof, because he's been ridiculed his whole life that he's actually logged a lot of these insults and he's kept them so he could flip the script when needed. And here's the prime moment. It's just awesome. And I love that you rattled off some of the bangers, and there's just too many to go through all of them. But there was one that was, he says, and it's great that you said, like you said, he labels each insult with a theme. And this one was humorous. Laugh and the world laughs with you. Sneeze and it's goodbye, Seattle. That's a great one. They're all zingers. They're all great. And talk about putting a bully in his place and then ultimately actually kicking his ass physically in the end. It's a real drop the mic moment. That's how you impress the crowd. It's a real showstopper. This is Steve Martin at his best. As an actor, I'm watching this going, there's plenty of cuts, and I'm sure there was rehearsals and so on and so forth. But like you said, that bar's packed. He's got a full crowd. It's all him. It's basically a monologue of insult jokes.
Yeah, one of the insults, he actually has all the crowd sing along with the punchline.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got the whole world in his nose. Yeah.
I was thinking, what didn't make it into that scene? What was on the cutting room floor, you know?
Oh, sure.
If they showed 25, I'm sure there was 40 others at least that they could have put in there. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Absolutely. It's really funny.
All right. So for me, another, I guess it's kind of part scene, part moment. So we have Chris, our strapping, young, good-looking firefighter, who's an actual firefighter compared to all the volunteers who currently work at the department. He's come in to help because we find out from a scene with CD and the mayor that they really don't have the funds for the department, hence why they have all these volunteers who are very inept. So they need to at least bring someone in to help CD train these guys. And Chris actually arrives early to the station, and he's met everybody else in the department except for CD. And when he's meeting them, all the volunteer members are warning him. And just so you know, CD is a little bit funny looking, so please be on your best behavior. And then they eventually tell him it's the nose and tell him not to stare at the nose. And Chris is like, I'm going to be fine. Don't worry. I'm not going to stare. I get it. Thanks for letting me know. They're telling him like he's very self-conscious about it. He gets very angry about it. Do not stare or point out that he has a big nose. I think there's two or three scenes that emphasize this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Chris is like, got it. So we have all the volunteer firefighters and Chris are in the station. They're playing pool. And here comes CD and he's meeting Chris for the first time. And right away, all Chris can do is stare at that nose. Luckily, though, at this point, CD thinks that because of what happened at the bar, that Roxanne actually has a thing for CD. So CD is very excited that he's like, oh my God, I think maybe I'm falling in love with someone. This someone is going to reciprocate that love. So we have CD goes up to Chris. Hey, welcome to the station. Happy to have you here. And all Chris can do is just stare at his nose. And he does not hear a thing that CD is saying. And CD, of course, right away catches on that Chris is staring at his nose, and the rest of the volunteer fire department is standing in the background in like a semicircle, just watching this going, oh shit, Chris is in trouble. And CD is looking at him and he's turning his head back and forth. And Chris is turning his head back and forth, staring at his nose, kind of circle a little bit. Chris is circling a little bit. And you're just like, oh my God, what is going to happen to Chris? And then CD says to Chris, It's hypnotic, isn't it? And at that point, Chris is almost happy that CD has mentioned something because it almost feels like it's his in. And he literally grabs CD by the shoulders. He's like, it's huge. It's enormous. It's gigantic. I mean, they said it was big, but I didn't expect it to be big. And what's going to happen? And CD actually lets it go. At this point, the whole volunteer fire department has run down the stairs because they're like, they don't want to see what happens to Chris.
Right.
And Chris realizes, oh, shit, I'm in trouble. And CD doesn't do anything. He just goes, hey, you want to play some pool? And Chris is like, you're not mad? He's like, no, let's just play some pool. So rack him up. And of course, the volunteer department doesn't hear anything bad going on. And then they start coming up to see what has happened and noticed, wow, Chris is still upright. Nothing's happened to him. And then we have one of the volunteer fire department, I think it's Chuck, says out loud, wow, you finally got a sense of humor about your nose.
Yep.
Yeah. And CD literally grabs Chuck by the collar and whips him around and throws him into the bench. And then that's kind of how the scene ends. But luckily, CD and Chris form a pretty good relationship through the rest of the movie. But yeah, that opening is just kind of funny because, like I said, no matter how much someone's going to tell you, doesn't necessarily prepare you. And certainly was the case in the scene.
I'm glad you called this one out. And there is some buildup, as you said. And this is Damon Wayans has his brief scene of dialogue in this when he's trying to explain to Chris. He's like, you're not going to want to stare at it. And all of a sudden, you're going to find yourself staring at it. And then you're going to be conscious about the fact that you're staring at it. It's pretty funny. Just really trying to prep him for it. It just can't do it because then it happens. And I love that moment. He called it like, it's hypnotic, isn't it? When Steve Martin knows that Chris just is completely obsessed with his nose in this moment, and he keeps moving his head back and forth like a clock. That's a great moment. And the fact that there isn't this explosion that the other firemen are predicting here, they're all cowering in the corner. And he says, okay, Chris, rack him. Let's play some pool. And I do appreciate this moment. And the reason why CD doesn't go off on Chris is like, you're not going to kick my butt? And he's like, no. He's like, why? And CD says, because yesterday she didn't. And today she does. I believe that's the line. I could be wrong.
It sounds right.
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. And meaning that yesterday, Roxanne didn't love me. Today she does. Because he's under the impression that Roxanne is in love with her. There's been some miscommunication. That's a different part. But now CD is floating on air. So he's not in the mood to get into a fight. But yeah, then when Chuck calls, oh, I was glad to see you have a sense of humor about your nose. Grabs him and throws him into the bench. Good stuff. Great scene. And Rick Rossovich, good job. He's really funny in that moment when he is so wide-eyed when he just lets it go because it's the 800-pound nose in the room. And he literally addresses it as obnoxiously as you possibly could. It's the worst scenario, worst case scenario. Yeah. It's nothing subtle about it. Besides the fact that he's staring at it, he just can't hold back but scream about it. All right. So we know the general premise of this movie is the fact that CD has fallen for Roxanne, but Roxanne is in love with Chris, the hot fireman. And the problem is Chris doesn't know how to talk to the ladies. So CD is going to help Chris because he's got the right words. And we don't have this, I believe, in our favorite scenes, even though it probably does belong, but I'm going to touch on it briefly because it leads into my next favorite scene. So there is the probably what would be called the most famous or most iconic scene from this film is the sequence where Chris is going on his first date with Roxanne and he's very nervous. And he asks CD for help and they form a plan. And CD is going to be in a van just down the street from Roxanne's house. And he rigs the system with, it's like a CB radio. And he gives Chris an earpiece that he's going to wear in his ear. And Chris has to wear, what would you call that hat? I mentioned it offline.
It's like almost like a hunter's,
hunter's cap that has the ear flaps that cover the ears so that when he talks to Roxanne can't see that he's wearing an earpiece under the ear flap of his hat. So while Chris is speaking to Roxanne, well, down in the van, CD is actually feeding Chris these romantic lines. And it goes awry after a moment when the CB or radio goes down and CD
CB and CD. CD can't say the right lines to feed to Chris. Chris says some obnoxious, rude things about this. Is a pretty funny moment about Roxanne's breasts, that they're melons. That no, they're pillows. Can I fluff your pillows? It's a great line. So awesome. It's awful and it's awkward. And she freaks out, runs inside. He goes down to the van, and CD's got to figure out a way to remedy this situation. So they go back to the house. Chris throws rocks through the window accidentally, but gets Roxanne to come out onto the balcony. And now CD is in the bushes with Chris, and he takes over, basically. And because Roxanne can't see him, he starts speaking as Chris, spouting all of these wonderful romantic lines, and basically ends up wooing Roxanne. And Roxanne then is seduced, and she goes to bed with Chris. And I love this last moment, because CD goes up to the house as Chris goes inside, and he's so proud of himself. CD's like, oh my God, I did it. As in, he wooed Roxanne to fall in love with Chris, or to go to bed with Chris. And then he realizes, oh no, she's going to bed with Chris, not me. I'm in love with her. So he goes, oh God, I did it. Oh shit, I did it. So this goes into my final favorite scene, where now cut to, it's some random park. It's night now. And it's a random park in the middle of town. And we have our crew of old ladies that we've seen previous in the film. And they're very funny. I believe it's Nina and Dottie and Sophie. They're walking along. And all of a sudden, out of a tree falls CD. He just falls straight out of a tree onto the ground. And he looks up and he goes, where am I? And the girl says, you're in Nelson. He's like, Nelson? What? I'm home. They brought me home. And he waves to the sky, looks up and goes, bye, as if he's saying goodbye to these alien abductors. He's like, what day is it? And one of the ladies goes, Friday, Dallas is on. Like, Friday? Then it took no time. It didn't exist in time. They're like, what are you talking about? And he goes, the spacecraft. I was walking along and a spacecraft landed right in front of me. And so they're like, what the hell are you talking about? And he basically says, you think I'm nuts, don't you? They wanted to ask me about older women. And they go, why? Because they wanted to have sex with them. One of them goes, where? And he says, here, right here, Nelson. They wanted to start a colony of supermen who would have sex with older women because they said, and I quote, they really know what they're doing. And immediately when he says that, Lydia goes, we do. And one of the other ones says, it's been so long. He convinces them to run off looking for these aliens because supposedly they were about to go to Roxanne's house to visit her next. So I think that the purpose of the scene is like he's trying to convince these ladies to go run over to Roxanne's house to intervene in this sexual interlude that Chris and Roxanne are about to have. It does not work. That is implied afterward. But I just recalled that this actually is an early memory of mine. I want to say my sister and I, or my family, when we watch this on cable or whenever, it's the physicality of Steve Martin in the scene when he's explaining being abducted by the aliens. He says they kind of walk around with suction cups on. So he does the sound effect and he keeps doing it. And he does it with his hands as if his hands are suction cups. And he's like got like spread eagle jumping around on his legs. And it's just really funny. He puts on a show for these ladies and actually convinces them that these aliens want to have sex with older women. So I love it. I have a fond memory of that scene. Love Steve Martin in it. There's some funny lines. That was my last favorite scene.
Yeah, good scene. Just my one complaint, that lady should change her line from it's Friday, Dallas on to it's Friday, Miami Vice is on. That's all.
Yeah,
they were kind of funny. I would have liked to see a little bit more of them in the movie, too.
Yeah.
CD was very playful with them throughout the movie. And this was really the culmination of that. So, yeah, it was a good stuff. All right, time to move on to Swiss Cheese and Complaints Department. And why do we call it Swiss Cheese?
Because although this movie is delicious, it does have large nose nostril holes.
Yes, and if it doesn't have those nostril holes, we just file a complaint with the complaint department. All right, Jason, what do you have for Swiss cheese or complaints?
I'll start with this. I don't have many for this. I just had fun with this movie. I went with it. But in the very opening, when we're introduced to CD, he's coming out of his house at dusk. He's about to return a tennis racket to someone whom he's borrowed it from for a year and a half, which is hilarious. And he's singing to himself that song. I'm walking, I'm talking. So he's singing to himself, making up lyrics, and he's walking down the slope, one of the many sloped streets in this mountainous town. And he sings to himself as he sees two characters walking toward him and says something to the fact, like singing, two coked up hopheads are approaching me. And immediately we see and recognize Kevin Nealon. And I forgive me, I don't know the other actor's name, but it's two guys. There was only two of them, and they're carrying one set of skis, one set of ski poles, and a 12er of light beer. And they seem to be either high or drunk out of their minds. And they're wearing, holy shit, short shorts and tight shirts. And my complaint is, what is going on here with their outfits? And why do they have only one pair of skis between the two of them, and they're not dressed as if they had been skiing? I was just really confused. They just looked so odd with skis. It's a great fight sequence because what follows is CD kicks the crap out of him with his tennis racket and is calling out like he's calling the score of a tennis game as he's doing so. But the choreography is great and the physicality is great. But I just didn't understand these two guys and who they were, where they were coming from.
Yeah, this kind of ties into my first complaint of the movie. And I literally wrote the first 6.5 minutes of the movie. I do like him coming out and doing the singing and makeup lyrics. I was like, I remember doing that as a kid. I would go to a friend's house, and when I was walking, I would just whatever song I could think of and just make stupid lyrics of things that were happening.
Sure.
On the way there. So I'm like, oh yeah, I've done that. But I know they had the fight scene because in the play itself that there's a similar scene in there. So that's why this is in there. There's this fight, but it's the summer there. So you're not really doing any skiing. And yes, the guys insult CD about his nose.
Right.
CD turns and he kind of does this funny bit where he's like, oh, I really like your shoes, but I don't want to be in your shoes right now. And then he physically attacks both the men. Like, he's the one that instigates that fight.
Right.
Like, he could have took the high road and kept on walking or
sure
said something. Yeah. So I was like, it just seems kind of weird that he started a fight with them. I'm like, you're the fire chief. I mean, they can report you and then you're out of a job because you attacked them first. They didn't attack you. They were just assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Literally tell CD to get off the road because they're making their way through. So I wasn't that big on the fight scene. And then you go a little further. He returns the racket to Dixie. So you meet Dixie. And then there's this bit when he goes to get a newspaper. And it's one of those old machines. And he puts the money in and he pulls the newspaper out. And he like screams at it.
Yeah.
And then puts the money back in the machine and stuffs the newspaper in there.
Right.
Then once you get through that, then the movie almost seems a little bit normal from then on where the comedy is. But it was uneven comedy to me at that point. It just didn't do it for me.
I gotcha. I laughed out loud at that moment. He looks at the paper and he screams. Yeah. I just, and he has to put the money in just to open it to put the paper back in. But yeah, with the going back to, yes, I meant to preface that fight scene happens because obviously they make fun of his nose. It makes more sense now that that was in the play, that there is a fight sequence, because back in that time in 1897 and where when the play is set, there would be a sword fight of some kind. And that's how the scene is set up, because then it all makes sense. It's preordained. Like, it's, you have Steve Martin with the tennis racket and these guys with ski poles, and they're going to have a duel. So that makes more sense now that it relates to that scene in the play. It feels weird, like you said, because of they're not coming off the slope in their ski outfits or snow garb or whatnot. And when they are approaching Steve Martin, you said it, they are already berating him and telling him to get out of the way. And it's so over the top obnoxious. I was like, oh, these guys are just kidding. They're friends with the fire chief because it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. But no, they are really going at him 100 miles an hour from the get. And then they get into the fight scene.
Yeah, what else you got for complaints or Swiss cheese?
Let's see here. So I mentioned I'm a big fan of Sandy in this movie. She's super cute. She's very flirtatious. I like that. And she's got a certain 80s look that I just,
definitely.
I just love. So speaking of laying it out pretty thick, there's a specific scene in this after we know everything that's going on. And Chris is trying to date Roxanne and obviously is very into her. And Roxanne is head over heels for Chris. Well, there's this scene in the interim where he goes to the big saloon bar and he's by himself at the bar, and Sandy works there. She is the bartender, and she has at this point, she's also befriended Roxanne, who's come in for the summer. Well, Sandy's got an obvious crush on Chris because he's hot. He's tall. He's handsome. He's good looking dude. Rick Rossovich, Slider. Come on. What's not to like, right? Maybe he's not the brightest crayon in the box, but doesn't matter. She's really attracted to him. This is Sandy I'm talking about. And so they have this conversation and she's really laying it on. And I'm like, yeah, not cool. And I'll give her credit for feeling bad. She's like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm sort of friends with Roxanne, but she doesn't really hold back. So that's kind of like, it works for the movie, I suppose. But in the moment, I was like, so it's not real. I don't know. It's not a complaint. Maybe I'm just mad about it. I'm like, wow, you're doing Roxanne dirty here, Sandy.
You just wanted to mention Sandy.
Okay. It is funny. It's a funny scene. And you know what? I was also like, why isn't she's hot? Why isn't Chris nervous talking to her?
Correct. She's very cute.
But he's clearly a little more attracted to Roxanne. I guess that's why he has butterflies in the stomach that may cause him to get sick. But I like her line when she says, I think that when one person finds another person interesting, then they become interesting to that person. I'm like, what? Anyway, what do you got, man?
I have to complain about the volunteer fire department.
Yeah.
I think there was too many characters, so you didn't get to spotlight them. And then I thought some of their stuff was just a little too over the top. It didn't fit the tone of the movie itself.
Oh, okay.
Because you kind of find out that the department's been cut, so I think that's why they have to have these volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mayor says, hey, once the money comes back in, we'll dump the money back into your department and you can get fighters and we'll have to use the volunteer. And the mayor himself is actually one of the members of the volunteer fire department. But they make these guys like super, super inept.
Right.
Like, I like the scene when they were almost kind of playing jokes on each other where they had the one guy and he's holding the hose and Chris is like, trust the water, trust the water. And then Chuck's like, cut it. So then he falls on his face. And I'm like, that works because that's funny because they're volunteers. So they're playing off each other. But when they're just overly like they can't do anything correct, like they go to rescue a cat and they're all half of them are hanging out of the tree.
Sure.
I don't know if I needed that. I would probably cut him down to half. I definitely would have kept Andy because Andy was hysterical.
Michael J. Pollard. Absolutely. He's very funny.
Probably kept the mayor, who was Fred Willard. And it's like he's a volunteer, yeah, but he doesn't want to do anything because he's the mayor. That would have worked for me. And then maybe had two other guys and then just more of honest things that they would do wrong as firefighters. And I thought that would have been funny, like maybe not realizing, you know, the weight of the hose and falling and that kind of stuff. But the fact that somehow one of them's shooting on a stream of water outside.
Sure.
It doesn't fit the rest of the movie to me. That was my issue with them. And because there's too many of them, I don't get to learn anything about them except for Chuck, who owns the All Dead Things business.
Right.
And he just hits on anything that moves with boobs.
Yeah. You know, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that. I think I agree that they could have used maybe one or two less volunteer firemen and could have cut one of the scenes. Like maybe that scene with Snowball the cat. That was very over the top when you got one guy hanging from the tree swinging around. It's very choreographed, very set up, but it really lends itself to the lightheartedness of the movie. I enjoyed some of the slapsticky moments. And Andy is great. Michael J. Pollard, he's very funny because he's got that such a weird affect, his voice and his demeanor. And at one point, his little fireman's jacket is on fire and he doesn't believe CD. I love that moment. It's like, oh, you're just playing with me. And he realizes like, oh, my God.
But that scene almost works in a way, too, because it's, hey, the start the fire and the fact that they can't start it.
They can't start, but they managed to light his jacket on fire.
Right. That I was like, all right, that's somewhat not over the top.
I'll give you that much. Not every little bit works.
Right.
But
or the one guy, the hose by himself and the hose. I was like, yes, those hoses are really powerful. And that could happen to someone doing that. Like that I bought. Or them playing the prank on the guy who's holding the hose and then they cut the water so he falls on his face. Like, I bought that. But the other stuff that I just thought was just like way...
Just too much. Yeah.
It was just too much for me.
I went with it. But I get it. I totally get it. I think... just wanted to call out Fred Willard, too. I'm glad because he played Mayor Deebs. What a great name. And I'll actually mention him again in a moment. But Fred Willard, so funny. Love that guy. So... I guess I have, I was just, you know, speaking of just going with it, that's what I said works for me in this. This is suspension of disbelief. It's a little Max Headroom right there. One could easily make in this movie that you could easily make the argument that Roxanne is way too smart to fall for Chris parroting the lines spoken to him by CD. But that's what happens in a lot of these comedies. They really rely on these set pieces, which require one character to be, quote unquote, in the dark as to what the hijinks are or what prank the protagonist is pulling off or stunt that they're pulling off. And then, of course, the character that's pulling the stunt is so awkward and so fumbling about that it's so obvious. How does Roxanne not know that something's up, right? Because Rick Rossovich is really awkward. It's like, no, something's going on here. Tell me the truth. I'm just saying I could see someone complaining about that possibly, but this movie works for me. I think Daryl Hannah does a good job handling those scenes. And there are little lines here and there where she is a little bit not believing what's happening. Sometimes you're like, oh man, there's no subtlety here at all. For me, it worked in this movie. So it's a complaint, non-complaint.
Gotcha. My last one, it might be a little Swiss cheese. So there's a scene when Daryl Hannah says she has to go away for a little bit because the reason that she's there in Nelson is she's trying to follow this comet. She thinks it's a comet that's not been charted and she might be making a discovery. So she sees CD and says, hey, if you see Chris, here's my address. You know, maybe you can write me some letters. Of course, CD does not give Chris the address and he writes letters, multiple letters. And Roxanne is so enthralled with the letters that she cuts her trip in half and comes back to see Chris. Now, I know the postal system works a lot differently today than it did back then.
Right.
But I mean, technically, she doesn't get all those letters. Okay, if I mail a letter on Monday, maybe she gets it Wednesday.
Okay, I got you. Sure.
Maybe she read half the letters. She didn't read all the letters.
And supposedly he sent her 20. He sent like 6 a day and then some.
Yeah. I mean, if it was today and she mailed, she never even would have got the letters. She would have came back and she would have had 20 letters wherever she was staying at because the mail's so slow.
They would have had to been forwarded or sent back or somehow. And then that would have taken a whole another 2 months.
Yeah.
And she would have already then have left her summer home and gone back to where she's from.
Like, exactly.
She would have got them a year later.
Postal system might have been a little bit better back then, but still not that good that she would have got all those letters for us to come back.
Good stuff, man.
All right, time to move on to, hey, it's that actor.
All right.
In this segment, we spotlight a character actor you have seen in many other films, an actor making their big screen debut, or an actor that makes an uncredited cameo. It's, hey, it's that actor. Who do we choose this week?
All right, Bill Bant. This week for our Hey, It's That Actor, we've chosen John Kapalos, who plays the role of Chuck. He plays the role of Chuck, a volunteer fireman and owner of the All Things Dead store in Nelson. He is great. He's very recognizable. You wouldn't maybe know him by name, but you're like, ah, it's that guy. And we have talked about Chuck a little bit. Chuck, the character in this film, is a little bit of a, let's just say it, douche. And he is a little overly aggressive with the ladies, trying his one-liners. And so not a great guy, but he adds to a little bit of that comic relief just to see the other people's reactions to him. And John Kapalos is an actor, writer from Ontario, Canada. And looking at his 80s snapshot, you know, he had appearances in Thief, which we covered here, in Dr. Detroit, Class, 16 Candles. You may know him, however, as Carl, the janitor from The Breakfast Club. And it's funny, you look at it, it was only, 2 years before this movie, that was in 85, right? The Breakfast Club. He's a lot thinner. He looks a little bit different, but it's him. He still looks good in this, in Roxanne. He's also the candy bar owner from Weird Science. Moving on to the 90s, he was in one of my favorites, Internal Affairs. He does a ton of episodes on TV shows. Recently, he did have appearances on the now popular show Suits. He was in The Shape of Water, which won Best Picture that year. That was 2017. I think probably the Oscars were 2018. He did 5 episodes of The Umbrella Academy, which is a popular show, and has been featured in 29 episodes of the classic soap opera Days of Our Lives. dating back from 2009 to now present. But of course, I must mention, back in 1985, besides playing Carl in The Breakfast Club, he played the character Andy Sloan on Miami Vice in one episode called Milk Run, classic from season one. Last but not least, he is most famous and internationally known for his co-starring role as Detective Shank, or Shanke, in the Canadian vampire cult series Forever Night, spelled with a K, from 1992. He was in 48 episodes from 92 to 95. Didn't know about that show.
Never heard of it.
John Kapalos is 67 presently, and he's still going. Good old John Kapalos. So I have to give a quick shout out to one other, hey, it's that actor. When we see Fred Willard, who plays Mayor Deebs in the middle of town, he's got this beautiful blonde on his shoulder, and or I should say on his arm, and I just like, oh my God, who's that? She's gorgeous. She's an immediate standout. And we barely see her. She doesn't have any lines, I don't even think.
No, I don't think so.
Like, who is that? Well, if you go back to our Fright Night episode, she is credited as Hooker. She plays the blonde that is going into the house at first. That's Heidi Sorensen. That's Heidi Sorensen, who was a playmate from, I believe, the July issue in 1981. She was in History of the World Part 1. She was in an episode of Cheers and Fright Night, as mentioned. Spies Like Us, she plays Fitzhugh's supervisor. And in this, Roxanne, she is credited as Trudy. So just wanted to give out a shout out to Heidi Sorensen. Barely in this, but I was like, dang.
Nice catch. All right, so that brings us to facts and trivia. What are some facts and trivia we have about Roxanne?
Some fun facts and trivia, Bill Bant. Well, Steve Martin had always been a fan of the Jose Ferrer version of Cyrano de Bergerac and says, I remember just thinking it was the greatest thing I ever saw. I think it's because the character is so strong. He's like a very smart version of what, coincidentally, is popular in movies today. He's smarter than everybody else, quicker than everybody else, wittier than everybody else, and tops everybody. That's what the original Cyrano is like. And this just sort of takes that vicious edge off it. In the early 1980s, Steve Martin had the idea of updating the play only with the difference that Cyrano would get the girl in the end. He decided to write the screenplay himself, writing 25 drafts over 3 years.
Crazy. But yeah, this movie got a lot of praise and Steve Martin got a lot of accolades, and I'll read off some to you. So Steve Martin won Best Actor from the Los Angeles Film Critics Association Awards. And he won Best Screenplay Based on Material from Another Medium from the Writers Guild of America. He was also nominated for a Golden Globe for his performance in Roxanne.
When Steve Martin, is consulting the plastic surgeon about getting a nose job, he holds a picture of the nose he wants up beside his nose. The picture is of his real nose. Although he holds a few different pictures up. So I was like, which one? I'm assuming it was the first one.
Yeah, I think it was the first one. So we talk about Rick Rossovich, who plays Chris in this movie. Well, we've mentioned his brother in the past, Tim Rossovich, who played professional football for the Philadelphia Eagles and was later an actor. He was my Hey, It's That Actor in season one for our Cloak and Dagger episode.
Oh, how about that?
I know.
While wearing the false nose, Steve Martin was often greeted with the phrase, nice nose. One day between scenes, he had to use the lavatory in a bar, and on the way across the room, he passed a group of bikers. Steeling himself for the usual greeting, he was delighted to hear one of the bikers instead ask, why the long face?
Nice, that's a good one. So our director, Fred Skepsy, began in advertising in Melbourne, Australia, working in an ad agency. His first feature film was The Devil's Playground from 1975, which won 6 Australian Film Institute Awards. He later directed, as you mentioned in the beginning, Barbarossa, which was produced by Paul N. Lazarus III, who was the director of motion picture department when we were at the University of Miami together. He was actually my first teacher, and that was the whole class was about Barbarossa and the production with that. So I have seen
degrees,
that movie,
man. That's
yep.
Crazy.
So yeah, we watched that in class and then went through all the behind the scenes, and that was a hot mess, but it was a good learning experience.
That's funny. And I just said 6 degrees of separation, talking about the connection between you, Paul Lazarus, and now Fred Skepsy. But 6 degrees of separation is also a movie that Fred Skepsy directed.
Correct.
All right. Shout out to the makeup department. Technology lent an important hand in providing Steve Martin with the imposing legendary We'll go with proboscis. Designed by makeup designer Michael Westmore. A specialty lab made a plaster impression of Martin's own nose, which was sculpted into a genetically appropriate larger version. This was then cast into a mold from which they made a supply of foam rubber noses. At least one a day was used for filming, which were applied with a spirit gum, edges feathered with rubber, and blended with Martin's other facial makeup.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job. I know you mentioned it too. There's maybe two or three shots where it doesn't fit, like the coloring was wrong, or you can kind of see the edge, but I was really impressed. That really looks like that is his nose.
Yeah, nice work there.
Yeah, like I said, I'd watch it three times, so it took a while for me to really be like, oh yeah, that they didn't get that one right or that one right, but yeah, good job on the prosthetic there. All right, so let's move on to box office. Roxanne was released on June 19th, 1987 in 847 theaters on an estimated budget of $12 million. It grossed $39.1 million domestically. It debuted number 5 at the box office and stayed in the top 10 for another 3 weeks. It would be the 27th highest grossing movie in the U.S., just behind Blind Date. So moving on to reviews, we kind of gave this away earlier, but that's okay. When growing up in the 80s, we would watch At the Movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert to hear their reviews and watch clips of upcoming movies. Their review of Roxanne was unanimous. 2 thumbs up. Roger called it one of the best romantic, whimsical love stories he had seen in a long time. Steve Martin is wonderful in this movie. Gene found it charming. A beautiful cosmic masterpiece that had him grinning throughout the entire movie. And I think Gene actually had it on his top 10 of the year in a later episode. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a tomato meter score of 88% with an audience score of 63%. That kind of surprised me. And it also has an IMDb rating of 6.6. So that takes us to additional thoughts and questions. What are some additional thoughts and questions you have about Roxanne?
Okay, real quick. Bill Bant.
Yes.
We know that Roxanne is an astronomy student, and there's often the mistake that is made between astronomy and astrology. What is the difference? Real quick, astronomy is the branch of science that studies everything outside of Earth's atmosphere. Astrology is the non-scientific practice of using the positions of celestial objects to explain or predict human behavior. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, that is brought up a lot throughout the film. All right, so I have a question, and it's legitimate. So we have that scene I mentioned with the mail that CD is mailing letters to Roxanne under the false pretense that the letters are coming from Chris. So we have a bunch of scenes when CD is like really nervous about mailing stuff. And I guess it's kind of played for comedy, but I didn't understand why it was such a big deal that he was worried about getting caught mailing things. And then by the end, he's just, you know, he's just whipping the letters into the mailbox. But it's like, why are you worried about getting caught? Back then, everyone was putting stuff in mailboxes. So it's not like someone's like, hey, what are you mailing? They're just going to see you're mailing something.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either.
That's a valid question. I thought maybe you had something that I didn't.
No, it's not as if someone is going to walk up to him and interrogate him.
Right.
Everybody mails letters.
And even if they saw they were mailing something to Roxanne, he could have easily came up with it. He's smart enough that he would have came up with something.
Yeah, it could have been one thing. Like in the beginning, he shouldn't have been nervous about it. But if he's doing it multiple times every day, maybe on the third day, Dixie catches him and notices and is like, I've seen you at the mailbox pretty often there, CD. What's going on? But yeah, he seems nervous about it from the beginning as if he's going to get busted when nobody knows.
Right.
Speaking of Dixie. Quick question for you. In the beginning, there's a scene at the bar when Roxanne is talking fondly of CD and how he's an encyclopedia. And Dixie says that CD is her godbrother.
I miss that.
Yeah. Like that's how close they are. So I was like, is that just kind of like, that's kind of a, like some sort of endearing title she's given him? I've never heard of anyone being a godbrother.
Yeah, that's news to me too.
All right.
Godfather, godmother, godbrother. I don't know what that is.
Let us know, viewers or listeners. Here's one. We know the big deal here for Roxanne is that she's discovered a comet. She's going to name it after herself, Comet Kowalski, which is great. Well, at the very, 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 very end of the movie, when she finally hooks up with CD and they go inside his home, we see the comet shooting across the night sky among the stars at the very end as the credits roll. Well, my question is now, did she miss her comet sighting? Did she miss it? Wasn't that the big, wasn't she supposed to get a viewing of the comet as it crossed the sky at a specific, on like July 14th at so many 100 hours, whatever it was? It's her comet that she's discovered. That was just my question. Did she miss her own comet due to sexy time CD?
Yeah, they could have probably watched it after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe after a little slap and tickle, they went up to the roof.
Right. Or maybe they had to run back to Roxanne's house because she's got the telescope there.
That, right.
I mean, you know, she's used to running around town naked anyway, so it shouldn't be a big deal.
I was going to say, well done. You beat me to the punch there.
Oh, let me throw this out here because I didn't know what this was when I heard it. So in the beginning of the movie, when CD returns the racket and Dixie grabs and she's like, what's this, like Vitalis on here or something?
Right. I had to look that up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hair tonic.
Right.
So if anyone's wondering what that was, because like the first time I didn't understand it. The second time I'm like, okay, I think I heard what she said. What the hell is that? And then when she said it the third time, I'm like, all right, I got to look this up to see what it is. And that's what it is, his hair tonic.
It's funny because I immediately thought it was some sort of big pharma drug like Vitalis for erectile dysfunction. For as in CD had ED.
Right. Funny.
Last question. Have you listened to Steve Martin's old comedy albums, Bill Band? Have you ever heard or listened to Let's Get Small from 77, A Wild and Crazy Guy from 1978, or Comedy Is Not Pretty from 1979?
No, but I actually do have his bio. I have his book, but I haven't read it
yet.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I don't think I've ever listened to his stuff.
I am ashamed to say I haven't. I know I've seen bits. I want to say he's performed live, like clips, which are always hilarious. And I've seen old video of him playing the banjo because he's integrates the music within his comedy. But I just know from listening to so many other podcasts with famous comedians that have come up through the years, always reference Steve Martin's early comedy albums. Yeah. So
yeah, they're going to do some homework on that. Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Jason, do you know what I knew about quarks going into this movie?
What did you know about quarks?
That was the name of the dog from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. That's about all I knew about that. So got to learn something.
That's wonderful. You know what I knew about Quark, a quark, one What's singular that? Quark. He's a character from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, there you go.
Right? Isn't he the bartender?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, right. I think it is Quark.
He's great.
Yeah.
Wonderful actor that plays him. Yeah.
With that, let's move into our rating. So on a scale of 1 to 5 honkers, get it? Honkers. What do you give Roxanne?
All right. I'm giving it 4 honkers, man. I love this. It's light. It's fun. It's funny. It's silly. It's awkward. It's whimsical, even a little sexy, and it's romantic. And in the end, spoiler alert, the guy gets the girl. As CD says when describing Roxanne, what's not to like? Steve Martin shines, and it's always great to see the familiar, funny faces in the supporting cast. For me, it was a great revisit. That's all I'll say. 4 honkers for me for Roxanne.
Yeah, I'm giving it 3.5, and like Gene Siskel. Yeah, just puts a smile on your face throughout. Like I said, the beginning to me was a little tough, but one of the hard things about comedy is the having a flow throughout and not breaking it down into bits. And it does get to a point where there is a nice flow to the movie. I think it really works. It's just even Steve Martin, Dale Hannah, their dynamic works. Even Steve Martin and Rick Rossovich's dynamic really works. And even watch this, like, why didn't Rick Rossovich do more stuff? I was kind of surprised.
Great, yeah.
That he didn't have more like big roles. I mean, he had steady work.
Even if he wasn't in the A-list, he could do the B. Like, I could totally see him as a B movie action star.
Right, or he should have had a show or something. Yeah, shout out to Fred Willard. Shout out to Michael J. Pollard. Yeah, Damon Wayans. I wish, you know, a little bit more of him in there. And yeah, Sandy, I thought she was a cutie too. Especially in that one outfit when she leans over to tell Martin that Roxanne has a crush on someone. Whatever she was wearing, it was like super 80s. I was like, oh my God, yeah, she looked adorable in that one.
Right.
Yeah, because that was always going to be one of my questions. Like, you know, when it came down to it, was it Roxanne or Sandy? Who would you run off with?
Ooh. Sandy, no question for me.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I probably would have did the same thing. But yes, it's a fun film. Enjoy it. There's some really good moments in it, and Steve Martin certainly shines. So 3.5 honkers.
Good stuff, man. You know what? I'll also say, yeah, Rick Rossovich could have easily been in a sitcom in the 80s too. You're right. He like a leading man, the handsome guy in the sitcom for sure.
Yeah. All right, I think that about wraps it up for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please take the time to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Give us a review and rate us if you can. If you want to learn more about our show, you can visit us at all80smoviespodcast.com. For our next episode, we will be discussing The Color of Money, starring Paul Newman, Tom Cruise, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. We hope you can join us. Have an excellent week, everyone.
Because I was afraid of worms, Roxanne. Worms! Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, world.